What's going on? What's going on? Thank you for joining in today. This is What You Thinking? Salon Talks with Zai Robinson. I mean, we can get into anything, and likely we're going to get into anything. You know how the Salon Talk is. We go everywhere, and I want to take you on that ride.
This is your girl, Zai Robinson, with What You Thinking? Salon Talks with Zai Robinson. And today I want to do a little something different. I want to talk about cancer. We're in October. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I want to circle back and talk a little bit about what I went through in my battle and my struggle and my fight with cancer. It was hard. It was so hard. It really was. And I don't wish it on my enemy. I don't feel that anyone should have to go through this struggle. However, I know that there are a lot of people out there who are dealing with this, have dealt with this, have lost people to this, myself included, lost my mother. I lost my mother to lung cancer back in 2012, and it was extremely difficult. I went through a long bout of depression over it, over her loss, and through the fight, because, you know, when you see someone who's so strong change so drastically and dramatically in such a short period of time, it has an effect on you, especially if they're a loved one. And my mother was everything for me, to me. She was a light in my life. And, so I just want to talk a little bit about cancer. I want to talk about the things that I went through personally. I'd also like to highlight some of the warriors in my life that were a part of my support system. And that includes the nurses and doctors who treated me. Like, my experience, though it was very hard, it was painful, and it was scary, there were blessings. I mean, blessings laid out for me through every step of my process. And I don't want to miss a beat on mentioning how fortunate I was, even considering the staging. Okay. So back in 2019, August actually of 2019, at that point, I was working in a salon, an Aveda concept salon. And then I also was teaching, and I had 20 students, I believe, on my roster at the time. And the semester just begun. So that mid-August range. And I just come back from visiting where I'm from originally, which is Wisconsin. And had a great visit up there. Come home. I know something's going on. I felt the lumps like a couple of months earlier. But I think I had a little bit of PTSD, and I didn't want to go to the doctor because I didn't want to get bad news. And that was something that I beat myself up about for a little bit there. But you have to let that go, because at this point, that's out of your control. So when things are out of your control, you can't harp on them. You can't, you know, because you can make yourself sicker. Honestly, you internalize these things and worry yourself over things that you can't control. And I'm notorious for that. I'm sure I'm not the only one. So the diagnosis came after a mammogram. And then after that mammogram, on that same day, I was sent to have an ultrasound. And when that woman left out from the ultrasound room, I could tell she was going to get someone. And so I started to get a little bit of anxiety. So the radiologist comes in and says, okay, we're going to need to do a biopsy. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like there is something abnormal going on here, and we need to biopsy this immediately. And it was just, he was very matter of fact about it. It was, you know, he's seen this before. He knows what it is. It was basically like he's saying, without me having to biopsy, I already know. But I'm waiting for the results of the biopsy, obviously. And that was painful too, them sticking those big needles that grab tissue out of your body. That hurts. And then they put these little clips inside to show where they'd, I guess, pulled the tissue from. And so whenever they do the ultrasound, they go back over these little clips and they can see the clip where they have pulled the affected area, pulled from that affected area. And so throughout the process, these little clips, these little were in there. And I just remember feeling very afraid. I remember the worry, the shock, but mainly I remember the fear. And I kept going back to my mother's situation. So when it was confirmed that it was cancer, the initial staging was like 2B. Okay. And I'll come back with some information on what the staging meant for me at the time. You know, what, how is it, it was explained to me. I'm not saying that I'm no medical professional, so I could get it wrong, but my understanding of it was this. And so I'll come back with that information in just a minute. But my husband and I got the news and it immediately shook up the family, because our family, our group now has this fight on its hands. But, you know, 2B is not that bad. I mean, it's earlier in the staging, right? So I'm like, okay, I got this. I got it. Even though I was afraid and I definitely didn't want that diagnosis, it was jarring. I knew I had it, you know, I got it. So then here comes the PET scan. After the PET scan, I wasn't even told that my staging had changed. I started asking questions about the difference between 2A, 2B. And it was like, oh, no, you're not in the twos, you're in the threes. I didn't even know that PET scan had shown that I was riddled with affected lymph nodes. It was, oof. So my treatment plan was that I had to have chemo after finding all of this out. I had to have chemo, surgery, and radiation. And I had to have the highest dose of chemo, which we call the Red Devil, during my process. And those of you who know, that stuff is no joke. I was on heavy steroids and I was on heavy chemo. And I'm the only person that I know gained weight and started looking around. Like, I saw all these people and they looked like they were, you know, losing weight and they were getting skinny. And I worried about that. But I did the opposite. It's like I blew up, like literally like a balloon. I just blew up. So I was round. And looking in the mirror was hard. But I will say this. I started with one team of doctors. But a friend of mine, a really good friend of mine, her name is Kaya, and she's like a sister to me, a younger sister. She was an oncology nurse. And I waited to tell her about it. And I knew what she did, but I waited to tell her because I was processing. And, you know, I had to take a minute to process. But when I decided that I was going to be different from what my mother was. My mother was very secretive. She didn't want anyone to know when she found out about her cancer. She only wanted family to know. I was the opposite. I want people to know because I need prayer warriors. I need resources. I need people to tell me because I don't want to fight this alone. I know that you can't fight it alone. And I don't know anything about this thing outside of me trying to go in and research it myself. And sometimes that takes you down a rabbit hole, which it did. But I needed help and I needed support and I needed friendship and I needed love and I needed to not be in my head. I needed to not focus on just this problem. I needed to break it down into bite-sized little steps and take each step as it came, as opposed to looking at this big picture of things that were so overwhelming. And so I talked to my friend Kaya And I told her where I was starting, you know, who my doctors were. And she says, no, I'm going to be honest with you. She said, no, bitch, you're coming to my hospital. You're going to come where I am. And she referred Dr. Feinstein to me. And I don't know what I had this, like, I have a loyalty thing where I start with you and then I'm going to try to finish with you. So when I started with the initial team, there was nothing wrong with that team. They were great, except for the doctor that I originally started with. He was just a little bit not my cup of tea because he's very abrupt and very dry and like not really engaging. And I understand that I'm just another patient to you who has another problem that you've had to train to deal with. And so you see this all the time. And as a doctor, you detach yourself from these situations. But I kind of needed a doctor who had feelings.
Looking back, I now realize that the reason I couldn't deal with his dryness and his detachment was because the oncology doctor who dealt with my mom during her ordeal and towards the end when she had to switch from cancer treatment centers in Illinois to the one in Wisconsin, to the oncology department in a hospital in Wisconsin, that person was so matter of fact and abrupt and irritatingly just kind of, oh my God, just rude. The way she talked to my mom, and I ended up cussing her out a little bit because, I mean, that's my mom. Like, who does that? So because she was the way that she was, I think that this first oncologist put me in the mind of her. And this is many years apart from my mom's situation to my situation. I wasn't going into it with that. I wasn't going to deal with that. And so when my friend Kaya told me about where I needed to be going and who I was going to be dealing with, I think that that's probably why the shift was so necessary for me and why I appreciated her saying to me, no, you're going to come over here.
So when I told her about it, she said, what are you doing? Why are you acting like you don't want to leave these people over here? They don't know you. They don't care like that. I mean, they want to, you know, make you better, but no, you're coming over here. I love her for that. Because going to Dr. Fine, and then she also referred Dr. Shroka, who was a breast surgeon. And she deals specifically with these specific type of cancers and other issues and illnesses that come within the body dealing with the breast. But that is what she, that is her specific area. And so as opposed to going to a surgeon who does it all, but then also can do your breast, it's a completely different plan when you go to someone who specializes in specifically that. And I love her because she took the time with me. So anyway, Kaya had me switch over. So I got in with Dr. Feinstein. When Dr. Feinstein talked to me, I felt like I was seen. And I felt like in my fear, in my tear, and I might tear up through this. And I apologize because it's still fresh and it's still raw to me that I had this thing and that this thing could have been so much worse. So much worse. So Dr. Feinstein, he agreed with the treatment plan that was initially set up for me. There were a few tweaks to the plan. And then Dr. Shroka sat with me and told me what was going to happen to my body after the surgery, what she had to take, how things would then work because she was taking certain things out of the body that, you know, fluids in the body move through lymph nodes and you take lymph nodes away. Well, that changes things. So you have this freeway. Or interstate. You have this interstate full of lymph nodes in the body and they run according to this interstate. And that's where they're all the direction they always go until you remove the lymph nodes. But when you remove them, now it has to redirect itself because it still has to work some kind of way. So you might not be on a major interstate. Now you're on a highway. Right. And so it has to reroute itself to this highway, you know, And so things might be a little different. You're going to maybe encounter lymphedema, swelling. It may change your range of motion. So you're going to really have to rehab. You're going to have to do rehabilitation to the arm so that it can move in the same way that it used to. And it still may never move exactly the way you're used to it. So these are changes, things that were very scary to me. And I didn't know if I would be okay. Now, in my spirit, you know, I'm a believer. I believe in God, and I pray, and I, you know, I'm God fearing. So I believe, you know, I've already been saved and all that stuff. So I know that I'm not alone in this, right? I know I have my angels surrounding me. But I am a stylist. I'm on my feet. I use my hands. So you're telling me you're gonna take something away that could potentially mess with my livelihood. The way that I see the world and interact with the world is through my profession. So it was very scary. It was so scary. It was so scary. But I had my Kaya, and I had, who was my, you know, the nurse. And then I had my Feinstein, and I had my Shroka. I had my radiologist, Dr. Santiago. Yes. And she was the radiologist. And I may have said that wrong, so I had to look that up. But these are people that I would refer hands down, because they worked together. The information wasn't lost anywhere in that shuffle. They worked together. They knew when I was supposed to go to whom. And, you know, I don't know how they communicated, but they communicated to work these cases together. And it was a cohesive system for me. So much information. My husband was amazing through my process. He was amazing. He went to just about every appointment, sat through chemo with me. And towards the end of chemo, like when I got up in numbers, because, you know, they tell you have to take, you know, 12 rounds, 6 rounds, whatever yours is. So when I got in the higher numbers, I did my countdown. I always did a countdown. So when I got into the higher numbers, the more tired I got, the less I spoke. I was in deep contemplation constantly. I was self-introspection. It was self-introspection, I guess, or introspective. I was introspective. I wanted to reevaluate myself because maybe the way I was living prior to cancer wasn't completely right. I don't know. But I know that when you're going through something like that, there's going to be some sort of shift or change. You're going to have a new lease on life if you beat it. If you don't know if you're going to beat it, and if it's up in the air, whether or not you're going to beat it, you're going to cherish every moment differently, right? And so I looked at my children and I realized that I was slow to anger and quick to listen, but I was slow to anger. Whereas I might've gotten angry over things that now in hindsight were nothing. So during my cancer, COVID hit, right? So I went through all of my chemo and I was done by that December, the December 30th, my son's birthday, was the last day or last round of chemo. I rang the bell, we left. I had to wait a couple of months for my body to adjust so that I could have the surgery. So the surgery was in February. And so then I'm in the healing process after the surgery. So you know what happens after that? COVID hits. The world is shutting down. I am very much so susceptible to everything. Cold, you know, hurt me because my immune system was compromised, which is, you know, those of you who know that it's immunocompromised, that's what they call it. You're immunocompromised. You are not able to go out of town. You're not able to get on a plane. You're not able to, you know, go into different climates and areas where, you know, it's not your familiar bacteria. You have to be careful. Coming home, you need to separate yourself, especially when I was on chemo, because that chemo seeps through the skin. You didn't want to contaminate your child or your husband. You know, it was just a lot that went into these steps, you know, that I was moving through. And it was all so much, and it was all overwhelming. But when COVID hit, there was an added fear. It was very intense, I believe, because if when my husband would work, he would have to then come home, strip down in the garage because he couldn't bring those clothes in the house. I mean, we went through all of these things, and they would have had to do it anyway, though, honestly, because you can't, when a person is stage 3C going through all of these treatments, the body is susceptible to infection in a different way, and it won't fight it. So they would have had to do this regardless of whether COVID hit or not. They would have had to have been more careful around me anyway. So when COVID hit, it was that you can't breathe on me. Like, it was just so much. It was so much. Looking back, it was like, wow, we really handled that. We did. I had the best support system ever. I think everybody in this house was more mindful of me. And everybody in my circle was more aware of how it could affect the next person. And I think that the blessing in that for me is that the people in my life love me enough to change those things immediately. It wasn't something that I had to even really discuss. They discussed it amongst themselves, and they just took care of it. And they took care of me. So, I mean, I know there are a lot of things that I could say, but instead of dwelling on just the parts that were scary, I do want to say that what was beautiful for me was the support, the love. My really, really, like, a bestie, my best friends, Margaret and LaShawn. Shout out to my ride or dies, who didn't miss a beat with me. One of my favorite clients turned friend, Dee Buckley. Like, she was so supportive. Like, I would have clients still, you know, every once in a while. I've always had my own studio, and wherever we lived, that was basically a salon situation. And Dee came and checked on me. She just, I don't even know if she really needed her hair done, but she just wanted me to see her. She wanted to be able to lay eyes on me to see that I was okay. And if I wasn't okay, she wanted to help in some way. I had people set up food or meals every other day for however many weeks. It was just amazing, the support. And you don't see that all the time. One thing I had to learn how to do was ask for help and be okay with getting help, receiving help from others, because that has always been a problem for me, asking for help on outside sources. I always found a way and made it happen. You know, that's my personality. That's in my spirit. That was my grandmother. That was my mother. And so I had to rely on the people in my life a different way. And what I love is that I can rely on my people, you know, but sometimes you're put in you're put in a situation where you don't have an option, and you have to rely on others. And it's important to do that, especially in a case of cancer. And for those of you out there who have that same issue as me, that affliction of not being able to ask for help when you need it, because you're so used to, you know, people letting you down, or you're afraid to allow someone in close enough that you are vulnerable, you're going to have to let that go. Let it go. Those who mean it will show up for you. Because and you need it. You need people to show up for you. You need people to sit there in those doctor's visits when they're giving you all this information as a second set of ears and another set of eyes, because you're not all the way there. Most people check out. I did. My mom did. You know, the chemo, that fog is real. The chemo fog is real. I remember someone telling me, don't claim that. I don't like when people say stuff like that, because I'm not claiming it. I'm acknowledging that this is actually something that is happening. So don't belittle my, because you want to, you know what I'm saying? And I'm spiritual, but don't belittle what I'm feeling, because I'm not claiming it. I'm just validating that. Yes, I do feel this. This is happening to me. So it was a lot. It was a lot. And I'm probably all over the place with this thing, because it was a long process. And so there was just so many things that we can address. My sisters. Oh, my God. My sisters and brothers, they were so awesome. They came up here through for my surgery a couple of times, I think. And it was just a lot of love. It was a lot of love. Family coming in from out of town, the ones who love me, never missed a beat, came and saw me. There were some who kept in touch. They called, you know, it was, you know, and they called regularly if they couldn't come, because I, you know, I'm in no one's pockets. I can't determine what you can and cannot do. But I know that God removed people who needed to be removed from my life during that time, and also showed me who I could depend on during that time. So I learned a lot about myself and who I should be giving my flowers to, giving their flowers to. Because, you know, sometimes we hold on to relationships that don't mean us any good. But there's a way. There's always a way to wash that away, to wash those bad relationships out of your life. Because, you know, some people are in your life for a lifetime. Some people are only in for a moment. And you have to be willing to face that reality, whichever it is. Okay? You might miss them, and you can love them from afar, but they're not meant for your day to day. Right? So I was shuffled. Some people were shuffled out of my sphere, and it was fine. It was what it needed to be. But yeah, my family support was great. COVID sucked. Kids had to stay home. That shit sucked. Oh my God. It was a lot of that too, because I learned a lot about what teachers have to go through. I learned a lot about myself though. I definitely went to some of the groups, and it helped. I got the massages. It helped. Lymphedema therapist, Kim Outlaw, she was awesome. And then also, my girl, Kiana Cleveland, she was awesome. I mean, it's just a group, a whole slew of people in the medical profession that helped me so much. But my family, supremely supportive. My boys and my daughter. Yeah, I was covered, and it was a lot going on, but I was covered. My sister-in-law, brother-in-law, my sisters-in-law and brothers-in-law, they were very instrumental, and just a kind word here and there. I was totally blessed. And if you're going through anything like this, if you've been recently diagnosed or you're deep into the fight, no matter what it is, lean on your people. Lean into the support because you need it so that you can just do what you need to do, which is take one step at a time to fight your fight. You are a survivor. You are strength personified if you have to fight this thing because you know how hard it is, whereas other people can only imagine. I've since lost my grandmother, an uncle, my cousin, Junior, my father, Kevin. It's been a lot of loss in these last few years, but my mom was one of the hardest moments for me. And then my grandmother, who was like my other parent my entire life, was another very difficult moment. And through all of that, I was dealing with my own stuff. So I think after the fight is another discussion that needs to be talked about, because after the fight, it's like if you're going through the fight, you're missing all of the points of what they say is the grief, right? Like you losing, you know, the anger, the denial, the whatever the stages are, right? After the fight, there's like this moment of now what? And I think for me, I kind of got, that's when the grief hit of the diagnosis. That's when I got the grief. I didn't have a chance to have grief because I had to fight. You couldn't mourn in it. You just had to move in and you had to keep a positive outlook on life because, you know, at this point, your mortality is being challenged and questioned. Are you going to be here? Is your life over? You don't have time to sit up here and dwell on thoughts like that because, see, the fight, you need to keep optimism in order to get through the next treatment. And you need to get to the next treatment in order to kill whatever this thing is that's attacking your system. So, people, please, please, please get you a good medical team, good oncologist, good surgeon, good radiologist. Make sure that you have a group session set up. These are the things that I advise because I know that they help. I know that they help, but you have to have a good medical team. You have to have spiritual support. You have to have your emotional support. You even need physical support to get you around in some of these cases. I remember, and this is a story, and this is a true story, and it was very scary. I went into, I was trying to have a normal day. My family was with me. We just got in the car. We wanted to run a couple of errands. At this point, I'm not driving. My husband's driving everywhere. And we go into Aldi's grocery store, just kind of grabbing a couple of things. Because we had come from another store in the area, and I said, well, let's just pop in and grab a couple things. I went into the store with my husband. I'm walking the aisle. I lost my vision. Cancer was floating through my orbitals, and I lost my vision.
And the only reason I got through that was because of my husband.
I had to walk up to my husband and asked him to read the label on cans because I couldn't see for myself. So much. My body wasn't cooperating with me. When I lost my hair as a stylist, that's identity. So I hated looking in the mirror. I cried when I had to shave my hair off. And it's such a vain point, right, to hinge your feelings on, but it's a valid feeling, okay? Because I've always had a lot of hair. I've always had long hair. If I didn't have long hair, it grew back quick, so I had long hair again. I've always had hair. And so I think I definitely, hung my identity on my hair. You know, I looked better with hair for me. But I had to grow through that as well. Go through that and grow from that, because now I feel like, honestly, I can chop my hair off and I would be just fine. But it has grown back, and it's grown back nicely. It definitely was different when it came back, but it was, that's just a part of the process. And it's a very small part of the process. And realistically, it's not even important, because life is more important than whether or not your hair looks good. Honestly, you can walk around bald and be okay. And I learned that. but when I shaved my head, I remember when my mother called me, and back then we were doing, I don't know if it was Zoom or what we were doing, but you were on your computer and she was calling me through the computer line so that I can get a video chat. That's what it was video chat with her. And this is back in 2011, 2010-ish. She had shaved her hair off. And when she called me, it threw me off. It like caught me off guard so bad. And I was like, wow, hey, mom. And I was pregnant at the time with my youngest son. And I said, okay, I'm shaving my hair. She said, if you shave your hair, I'm gonna kick your ass, because you've got the most beautiful hair. But I just remember I wanted to commiserate with her. Like, I want to be here. I want to support you in this way. I want to shave my head too. And lo and behold, I got my turn. You know, some years later, I've gone through my own process of cancer. So I got to shave my head. I didn't want to shave my head, but I had to shave my head. But yeah, I will say that life has been interesting. I feel like I'm better for having gone through what I've gone through, though I wish that I didn't have to. I wish that I hadn't had to go through it. But I'm better for having gone through cancer, because things that mean something truly mean something. And those things that don't, the things that I used to harp on or harbor on, they don't mean a thing. I'm picking and choosing my battles, because I know everything is not important as we make it, or not as important as we make it. We don't have to control every little thing. We control our reactions to the things that are happening. And that's a very important lesson I needed to learn. And it took so long. But I pray for those of you who are out here dealing with this. If you need resources and information, I will find a way to link some resources or contact information. But you are not alone. You are a survivor. You are one of the most strong and resilient of the people out here, because you know what it's like to fear your next breath not coming, or fear that treatment taking you out because it's very hard on your body. Fear catching of a cold or some sort of virus or, you know, infection. Stay strong, because you got this. And I am a witness and a testimony wrapped up in one. You know, I love you. I pray for you. I know that you will be okay. And if you're not, for those who have already lost, I'm with you in that, in solidarity, because solidarity as well, because I've been there. I've lost. And I know that pain as well. But God bless you. Keep the good fight going. Don't give up. Not in that way. Don't surrender to it. But most importantly, never lose hope. Hope is key. Hope is key. Without hope, you've already lost the battle. So, yeah. I pray that you get something from this. I pray that this message comes to you in a way that you can understand where I'm coming from, because I understand where you are, right? But enough of that heavy stuff. In our next episode, we're going to be hitting you up with part two of the worst client ever. So I want you to keep yourselves tuned in to Salon Talks with Cy Robinson, which is what you're thinking, what you thinking. Okay. And tune into the next episode, because I think it's going to be a good one. From here on out, we're going to start having a couple of guests in and out. Maybe not every time, but we've got a couple of special guests coming up. So just keep yourself posted, and I'll be talking to you soon.